This is Matt from PureNintendo.com, and you are listening to the KoopaCast, PureNintendo.com's official podcast. Before we begin, I would like to thank Big Giant Circles for allowing us to use his music for our podcast. To hear more of his work, please check out iTunes.com/BigGiantCircles, or you can go to BigGiantCircles.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the KoopaCast. It's been so long, but it feels so good. We're finally back after a week absence due to a little bit of a sickness. Just like every KoopaCast, well, except for the one before it because of some technical issues, we're gonna start out with some news. And we're not gonna cover the news that we could have covered a week ago because that news is old hat, and we have some new things to talk about. And, yeah, hooray! Oh, wait, I forgot to mention to the audience, please excuse the sniffles every once in a while. I still have that sickness, it's still around, but at least I could talk. So, you get to hear my voice, hooray!
Yeah, you're sounding better.
Oh, thank you.
Just be down with the sickness, folks.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, our KoopaCast don't have, like, themes anymore like they used to in Season 3. But I feel like our news always comes away with a theme. And this week's theme seems to be putting stuff up, only to see them getting taken down. Mm-hmm. And a couple of fan games came out. We're going to start with another Metroid 2 remake. So AM2R for short. That was released after 10 years. That's a
crazy long time to be working on one project.
That is a crazy long time. And he did it as kind of an excuse to learn some programming language, and he just kind of kept going with it and was like, hey, I'm just going to completely remake Metroid 2.
Nice. You know, it's kind of interesting. I remember Alex was talking about Metroid 2 a little bit in the Metroid 30th anniversary piece. And it's probably one of the easiest ones to do a fan remake of because it is more linear in nature. So it, you know, it's probably a good candidate for what the guy was trying to do. And, you know, 10 years, yeah, it's a long time. My guess is he probably wasn't working, you know, 100% of the time for that 10 years, but, you know, kind of in his free time here and there, but still a long time to be working on something and have it get taken down so quickly.
Yeah. I mean, he's still working on the game. You know, that's what his blog says. Through like little patches and support updates that he's releasing via a private server.
Yeah.
And for those people who are looking for the game is still easily able to be found. I think there are even links on his website to, you know, these zip files that have like the updates and all that.
There are ways, even though it's been taken down. No. I think that they know that it's always going to be distributed on the internet. As long as someone has downloaded it, it'll be alive.
Oh, yeah. The files are out there somewhere. I think it's key to realize that, you know, Nintendo knows that it's still going to be out there at in some shape or form, right? You know, I think Nintendo does these takedown notices because they can't let it propagate to the point of, you know, millions and tens of millions of people downloading these things and people thinking, wow, Nintendo's not doing anything, or, you know, we could do tons of fan remakes. You know, it's really just not to set a precedent. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's like, that's just a legal obligation that Nintendo has to participate in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like people that say, oh, Nintendo's taking everything down. It's like, you know, this is just what happens. I mean, if you, you know, take someone's copyrighted game and material and try and recreate it. It doesn't matter, you know,
what your intentions are.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Even if it's just, yeah, learn something or, you know.
And because somebody with, like, you know, less than pure intentions can come along and make a more blatant, you know, rip off or something like that. And then if Nintendo takes them to court, the defendants can more or less say something like, well, you know, you didn't defend this, so, you know, why are you defending this? You know. And obviously that's not an open and shut case at that point, but still something that Nintendo has to consider.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I know most people aren't totally surprised with the news, you know, every time it happened, you know, with the Nintendo Power issues and, you know, all these other little fan remakes, it's like this shouldn't really come as a surprise, you know. It's like this is, you know, Nintendo's been consistent with it. So, you know, I'm not entirely sure what these fans responsible for these remakes were honestly thinking was going to happen, but I hope they didn't expect anything but this. But
well, I mean, in their statements, and this is for both AM2R and Pokemon Uranium, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. Uh-huh. I mean, they both straight up just stated, we absolutely expected this to come. So, you know, please don't be angry at Nintendo. We knew this was happening. I mean, we knew this was going to happen. This is inevitable. This is what they have to do. So, obviously, they knew what was going on, even after, you know, investing so many years into this project.
Yeah. Well, eyes wide open. So, that's good.
Yep, absolutely. And, of course, like I said, we were going to talk about a little bit about Pokemon Uranium. And so, here we are. Let's talk about Pokemon Uranium. Not quite as long as an AM2R, or, sorry, A, yeah, AM2R, that's right. Not, only about 9 years as opposed to 10. But,
still a good one.
Yeah. And it's like, it's in like the style of like the Game Boy Advance, series of Pokemon games.
And yeah, so it's all the sprites. It's built off of the Ruby and Sapphire engine or something similar.
I can't remember exactly, but I think I read somewhere that it was made with like the RPG Maker engine.
Ah, okay.
I did not read that, but that's pretty good because most of the RPG Maker engine games I see are, they kind of look like the iOS versions of like the Final Fantasy VI with like the very rounded sprites and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've actually played a little bit of that one, and it's pretty fun. It definitely still needs some work. It suffers from some pretty bad frame rate issues, like when you're trying to use Rock Smash and stuff, but for like a fan to attempt it, it has like a genuine Pokemon feel. All
right, so, I mean, Alex, since you're into it, like, you know, how much is, like, you said it feels like exactly like a Pokemon game now?
It feels pretty close.
Like, do you get the sense of, like, is there any, like, glaring points where you're like, oh, this is, you know, like a fan game. Like, this is not something like Nintendo or the Pokemon company would do with this, or...
Well, some of the Pokemon designs will definitely go, oh, yep, this is a fan game. Uh-huh. It's like some of them can look a little silly, and others just looks like a flying anime cat. So
a flying anime cat?
Yeah, there's one, I think it was called, like, Outen. It literally looked like a flying anime cat.
Huh, I'll have to look this up. How do you spell that?
O-W-T-E-N, I believe.
O-W-T-E-N.
They just put owl and kitten together.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah.
Out in Pokemon Uranium. Let's see what this thing looks like. And I guess I'll put a link up to people watching at home. Excuse me. Listening at home. And, wow, yeah, I can absolutely see what you mean now.
Yep. Flying anime cat.
Are there shiny versions now?
I believe there are. They've pretty much incorporated everything into like the Pokemon game. So there's shiny Pokemon in there. Some of the new ones will use old Pokemon cries. Like there's one that uses like Zubat's cry, which is really weird. Like that is not a Zubat. But for like the honest attempt that they made, it's still pretty enjoyable. And I went into it with that. I was like, you know, this isn't going to be obviously the same quality as a Nintendo developed game. But just wanted to check it out, and I'm pretty impressed with what they managed to do.
Huh. All right, and you know, fans seem to be pretty impressed too. Before it got taken down, I saw that the game was downloaded, you know, 1.5 million times, which is a very good response for a fan-made project such as this. So kudos to those guys.
and much like the Metroid game, it's still floating around on the internet, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure maybe Pokemon Uranium has like a on their blog. I don't know. Actually, I don't know if they do, but yeah, you're right. You could probably easily find this thing.
We just need the X-Files music, and just the files are out there.
The files are in black.
I like it.
And of course, we caution everybody to be very careful about what they're going to go find online. Because obviously, since these games are not on the original sites they were posted on, you know, if you go to another site, you might accidentally find a very virus-filled file instead of the shiny new Pokemon Uranium game that you were hoping for.
Pure Media LLC does not advocate piracy, folks.
That's right, that's right.
Would these be considered piracy?
No, I wouldn't consider them piracy necessarily.
You might have to find them on said pirating sites, though, which is why you'd want to be careful.
Exactly, yeah. Like, the places where you would find these would be sites where, you know, there's other illegal files, so...
Right.
The unsavory part of the internet.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And speaking of unsavory, another thing that has been taken down from the internet due to, we could say this was probably straight up, this is much closer to the definition of piracy than Pokemon Uranium or AM2R, which is that there were about 145 issues of Nintendo Power just floating around on the internet on archive.org. Maybe for as early as February, that's when the account started being active, according to, I don't know, archive.org, I guess. And then everyone found it, and then less than a week between everybody finding the issues, the issues were taken down.
Yeah, I think it's because it started trending. Like, I saw it on, you know, like Facebook trends and Twitter trends, and, you know, it definitely hit critical mass that week before it was taken down, because everyone's like, oh, Nintendo Power, you know, and they're all, you know, downloading the issues, I'm sure. It is interesting how it ended up on archive.org, you know, to begin with. Like, you wonder who had the PDFs for that many issues, you know what I mean? I remember initially when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if Nintendo's just, you know, pushing them up there, you know, like they were closing out and they're like, hey, let's just throw up these on archive.org. Like, it was some sort of coordinated effort with archive.org to preserve them, you know.
That's what I thought when I first initially heard about it.
Yeah. And so I didn't think much of it, and then when it got taken down, I was like, well, I guess that wasn't the case. So who knows why, but I guess we haven't heard exactly why they were taken down.
Yeah, I mean, I've searched around, and everyone just says, oh, they're suddenly gone. We don't know what happened, so. Excuse me. So, if you downloaded those issues, congratulations to you. You now have a piece of digital treasure.
That's right.
On a side note, I did find scans of issues 1 through 19, so... If you're really looking to find strategies on some handheld football games, I know exactly where to go.
I like it.
And for those of you who don't want to look at old issues of Nintendo Power, why not check us out? We're a magazine. We talk about Nintendo. You know?
That's right.
If you go to purenintendo.com, there's a link to find buy our magazine right there.
Yep, check us out. Download your own digital treasures today.
Ooh, I like it.
we have a history. We've been around for years. We know the game. We'll be just as entertaining. It's almost like Nintendo Power never left.
That's right.
Okay, I gotta be honest. I don't have a good transition between this story and the next story.
That's all right. Hey, bad news to good news.
Yeah, bad news to good news, or odd news, as I think of it. Yeah. Nintendo's going to do another Splatoon test fire. That starts on August 25th and runs through August 28th. And it will run from 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. And this game's been out for a while. And we're near the end of the Wii U's life cycle. And there are no more Splatfests. So it just seems like a weird time to bring back the test fire. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
Maybe it's a way of just saying sorry for getting rid of Splatfest.
Yeah, maybe.
It's an odd choice. And I think they just want to try to keep that community alive, because that seems like by far it's been one of Nintendo's most popular games on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to keep that crowd around for as long as possible.
But Test Fire would just bring in like new people, right? Not like really catering to the people who are already sucked in.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think that could be part of it, is just increasing the online community even more. You know, because what was the software attachment rate for Splatoon? I know Mario Kart 8 was really high. And Smash Brothers was pretty high, but I thought Splatoon, even though it had sold like 2 million, I mean, it was still what, 2 out of, you know, 14 million systems or something. So like 1 in 7 people who have the system have Splatoon. So, I mean, you know, if Nintendo wants to ride the Wii U and really try and drum up some software sales, they're probably not going to get much more hardware sales, right? You know, most people are like, hey, the NX is coming out. Let's wait for that. You know, why buy a Wii U right now? But people that already have a Wii U, maybe they can still, you know, get a lot of people to buy into Splatoon. So,
mm-hmm.
That's very true.
There's still plenty of people that don't have it. So,
I'm really trying to find some of the attachment rate here.
Yeah, I thought they were, the last time they talked about it was maybe in the April briefing or something.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that we're like at like 4.2 million copies.
Oh, really? Well, that's more than I thought. So that's a little bit higher attach rate then. So if you had 4 out of 14 million.
Apparently in Japan, it's 45% of Japanese Wii U owners.
Really? See, that's awesome. That's impressive. Yeah. Yeah, I think like years from now, we're going to be looking back and, you know, there's been lots of really good exclusives on the Wii U, don't get me wrong, but I think Splatoon will be one of those where, you know, that kind of defines the system, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, sorry, but, I found it, 30%.
30%, nice. Well, that's not too bad then.
No, that's actually very good.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, as an industry standard, 30 is really high, 30 is really good, but... Nintendo attach rates on the Wii U are unusually high. So
yeah, if we were a more generally gaming podcast, we'd make a joke about that. But we're pure Nintendo, so we're just gonna let it slide.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, Splatoon's doing really, really well still. I actually have no idea what to add after that.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, pretty much it. Yeah.
There you go. Splatoon's doing well. There's another test fire. That's pretty much the end of that. I mean, there's not even going to be any more like new weapons or anything like that, right? Like, we're just done with all those kinds of updates.
I think so.
My knowledge, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean... No, that just makes it more bizarre to me. Because, I mean, I understand you want to keep the community active, but the best way to keep the community active is to interact with the community and, like, you know, not necessarily always give them, like, new weapons and stuff like that, like they have been doing in the past, but, like, the Splatfest were the best way, pretty much, that I saw, anyway, to keep the community alive without introducing, like, brand new content every week or something, you know?
Yeah, it does make you wonder you know, what's going on behind the scenes, you know, of why they can't keep doing the Splatfest, you know, up until the NX launch. You know, are they just pulling more resources from maybe that development team to work on, you know, potentially a Splatoon, you know, re-release on the NX? If it is indeed a hybrid, you have Splatoon and, you know, mobile, you know, handheld applications then, you know, so it's interesting, you know, why they're not continuing it. So, you know, it begs the question, why, what does it actually mean? So.
Yeah, just bizarre, bizarre things.
Yeah.
Speaking of bizarre, Germany's pretty bizarre, right?
Sure is.
Gamescom.
Wunderbar.
That was my segue. I apologize to any of our German fans. I'm scrambling for material here. It's been a very long week for all of us here.
Indeed.
But yeah, so, you know, Gamescom 2016 is coming up. And none of us, unfortunately, are going to be able to make it to Germany to go check it out. So, but it looks like Nintendo will have like a handful of games over there. Once again, I mean, the Wii U's list doesn't look like it's anything to kind of write home about. It's like it's a lot of indie stuff. Axiom Verge is going to be there, which I think is going to be great for a lot of Metroid fans. They're still supporting Fast Racing Neo. They're still supporting Fast Racing Neo, which I think is very, very good for them. Which I still have yet to pick up.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Fast Racing Neo.
Yeah,
they did a great job. Visually, the game is fantastic. The gameplay is great. I thought there was even a good selection of tracks, even with the launch edition. But with this new DLC, adding more tracks, I mean, that's makes a good package even better.
That's true. And I'm sorry, just as a side note, maybe I'll get rid of this in post. But I think it's kind of funny that like two of the Wii U's games for Gamescom is a game that's not Metroid, or that is Metroid but not Metroid, and a game that is F-Zero but not F-Zero.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's all you gotta do. Just give it a new coat of paint. Everything's legal.
Everything's legal. So yeah, so AM2R will be on the Wii U next fall.
That's right.
But the 3DS, once again, I think it's got a pretty good showing. You know, the major 3DS franchises are out and about with, hang on. Man, I'm sorry, guys. It's getting harder and harder to go on with this. But yeah, some of the more major franchises are out and about for the 3DS with like Phoenix Wright, Dragon Quest, Monster Hunter. So that's going to be pretty good. Mario Party, of course. You know, everyone's favorite. What's that?
I said the Friendship Ruiner simulation game.
Exactly. Right. And of course, Rainbow Pocket's going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely, you know, the lineup, and not to diminish it at all, but, you know, the lineup definitely speaks to the fact that I think, you know, we're seeing a wind down of the 3DS and the Wii U. The lineup definitely seems indicative of, you know, systems, handhelds, and consoles that are, you know, 4 and 5 years old. So, and again, you know, the great game's still coming. You know, I still can't wait for the DLC for Fast Racing Neo and Rumble Pocket and, you know, some of the other games on the list. Paper Mario Color Splash is going to be a cool Wii U game, I think, a sleeper hit. So,
oh, yeah.
So good stuff coming.
I just noticed that's totally not on the list.
Yeah, I noticed they didn't have that on the playable list, but it's kind of interesting. I know that they've announced a date for North America. It's like in October 17 or something.
Yeah.
But I couldn't remember if there was a European release date. I guess there would be, but if it was later, maybe that's why it's not at Gamescom.
I mean, I don't know if I can buy that, because, I mean, yeah, Gamescom's no E3 or anything like that, but still, like, a major event.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, another notable omission is Pokemon Sun and Moon. So, you know, I would say if Pokemon Sun and Moon, it's coming out in November, you know, I would say it's still a little too early to even have a playable demo. Back in, oh, was it 2014? Maybe earlier. It was back when they were coming out with Pokemon X and Y. I guess that would have been earlier, 2012. 2013. At PAX Prime, they actually had the first public playable appearance of Pokemon X and Y. And it was a small little playable demo. And that was unprecedented at the time, because usually you couldn't, I mean, even at E3, playable Pokemon games were fairly rare. So.
All right. So
they like keeping certain series like under wraps for some reason.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and Pokemon's always been kind of a hard one to showcase anyway, because you don't necessarily want to, you know, have people play like a 30-minute demo, you know, through the first whole, you know, beginning world. I know with that X and Y demo, they created like a special little area. You know, it was basically a little demo level.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to recall, couldn't you get like a shiny, what's that frozen Glalie? Lately Pokemon.
Oh yeah.
And he had the Glalite or whatever it is, so you could evolve him and mega evolve him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they made that downloadable as a part of like a demo for everybody.
Oh yeah, there was a special demo. It wasn't a shiny Glalie, but you got his mega stone, and you could transfer it to your games. It was like a special mini island demo.
Yeah, that was the first time I had seen something like that. And I thought it was cool they made it downloadable, you know, for everyone, not just at the PAX Prime, but
mm-hmm. I think that was for Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, actually, not X and Y.
Okay, I'm misremembering. See, we just need new Pokemon games.
Yeah, Justin, I'll totally okay if you want to try that whole statement again, and I'll just erase the last like 3 minutes.
What?
Yeah, no, I'm just.
Now it's better to have me fumbling.
There you go. Okay, make it more real, right?
That's right.
All right. And finally, as part of the news here. I just kind of wanted to talk about this because, as everybody knows, I am a huge Super Metroid fan. And before we spent every other podcast talking about Xenoblade Chronicles, we spent every other podcast talking about Super Metroid. And, you know, Axiom Verge is finally going to make it to the Wii U. And for those who don't know, Axiom Verge is a game that's heavily influenced by the Metroid series. You know, specifically Super Metroid, Metroid Fusion, Metroid Zero Mission, you know, the side-scroller ones. And, of course, I'm talking about the original Metroid and Metroid 2 as well. So nobody write to me that says, oh, you forgot the original 2. Yeah, I got them. but the games have been pretty much released on, like, almost every other platform except for the Wii U, 3DS, and Xbox One. So we're finally getting that. You know, according to, you know, the blog post on the webpage, developer says that this is going to be the best version of the game. So, I think our patience paid off. And we're getting the best version of Axiom Verge.
Yeah, and it's coming out pretty quick. I mean, September 1st is 2 or 3 weeks away.
Oh, yeah, it is.
3 weeks, that's crazy. But it's coming up quick.
I
kind of like when they announce release dates that are like, you know, oh, it's coming out in 2 weeks or you know, 1 month. I was like, those are always fun to hear, because it's not like, oh, this is coming out in 4 months. Okay, whatever, it may be delayed, you know. But when you hear about it like 3 weeks before, it's like, oh, then it's probably going to happen.
delay of game. I don't think that's happened in a while.
Yeah, that's true.
At least not to any major companies or anything, right?
Not that I know of.
Nah.
Other than the Final Fantasy 15 delay.
What? Final Fantasy 15 got delayed? I'm shocked and amazed.
Yeah.
So this
is news to me.
Yeah.
What was it? They were originally going to be in November, and then it got delayed to what?
No, it was originally going to be September 30. Mm-hmm. And it got delayed till November, beginning of December, or something like that.
Okay.
We can expunge that from the record, though.
Okay, you're right. Here we go. Yeah, it was officially delayed to November 29th.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Man. I mean, you think they just did that for fun? They're like, come on, guys, one more delay. You know, just for old time's sake.
Well, you know, I think this is actually the first official delay where, because they didn't even announce the September 30th date till like May this year, if I remember correctly. So I think they've always just given it like a year, kind of like Zelda, Breath of the Wild. They've always just said, oh, that's 2015. Oh, that's 2016, you know, and they never pinned it down to an actual date. But I think it was just a few months ago that they gave it September 30. So this is the first delay, I would say.
Oh, the first official delay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, granted, it's probably been in people's minds for, you know, 3 or 4 years ever since Square Enix first, you know, hinted at 15 coming out. But I would say this is the first official delay.
That's true. Yeah, it's not like, it's not going on like Last Guardian levels of...
No, yeah. It looks like the game is basically done. Like, from the gameplay they showed off at E3, I mean, the game looks like it's there. I'm sure it's just, you know, the reason you would delay a couple months is maybe to make sure you, you know, have enough stock. You know, maybe you want to release in a better time frame. Maybe there's localization issues. You know, so I imagine I would chalk it up to something like that.
I could see that. And, I mean, I'm sure people can't see our faces, but they certainly could hear that voice of disgust as from Alex, as I mentioned, The Last Guardian. Alex, did I hit a sore spot with you?
Just a little bit. I that was the sole reason I bought a PlayStation 3, was when they showed that off at E3 for the first time. So, yeah, I'm a little sore about The Last Guardian.
Wow, so that really hit you hard then.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah. I'm not getting a PlayStation 4 until I see that sucker on the shelf. I learned my lesson.
Cautionary tale, everyone.
Yeah, that's right. Man.
All right, well, enough talking about other games. And actually, enough talking about Nintendo games, because we're going to sign out of the news section of the podcast. So, Justin, thank you for joining me.
No problem.
Alex, also thank you for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
And for those of you listening at home, please stay tuned to Section 2, where we're going to talk a little bit about what we know so far about Pokemon Sun and Moon. So stay tuned for that. Hey everyone, welcome back to the KoopaCast. Joining me are some familiar faces. You might have just heard from them. It's Alex Ramke and Justin Sharp again.
Hey.
Howdy, folks.
And this time we're going to talk all about Pokemon Sun and Moon, kind of what we know up to this point about the two latest games coming out in the Pokemon franchise. For those of you who don't know, we're going to start with the basics, of course, which is that Pokemon Sun and Moon is going to release on November 18th, 2016 for the 3DS and 2DS. And I like to say we're all very excited about that.
Oh yeah, can't wait.
Can't come soon enough.
And I specifically brought Alex and Justin on here with me because I have only been playing Pokemon again for about a month, so my knowledge is so very little of it. Justin's a veteran of the Pokemon series, And then Alex is some kind of pro player. I think he goes on circuits.
He's a wunderkind.
I'm a wizard.
That's right. Like that movie about,
about that kid, you know? That giant commercial for Mario 3.
That's right. It's Mario Brothers 3.
Mario Brothers. Excuse me. So we'll be talking about the Pokemans on this episode.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Just pronouncing all your favorite Nintendo characters and games.
All right. And so I guess just kind of starting off about Pokemon Sun and Moon. This one's not going to be quite as landlocked as the previous games have been. They're going for like a Hawaiian theme. This is the Alolan region. And there's going to be about 4 islands in this region.
We see what you did there, game. Mm-hmm. And we like it.
We like it.
Yeah. Are there four Hawaiian islands? I thought there were like 5 or something.
Yeah, I think there's 5 main ones. There's like obviously smaller ones, but
I guess with the artificial island kind of in the center, would that count?
Okay, there are 8 main islands. Hawaii, Maui, Oahu, Kihulahue, Lanai, Molokai, Kauai, and Niihau. There you go.
All right, learn some geography.
But, if they just have the 4, then... But it's still loosely based on Hawaii, though.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we haven't really gotten too much into like the geography of these 4 islands in Pokemon. Because, I know like the areas aren't super huge in the Pokemon games, but I just feel like seeing the islands, I just feel like my options just kind of shrunk down a little bit more. I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, for me, I think I'll have to get my hands on the game to really tell you how I feel about it. From what I've seen from videos, it kind of seems like it's very streamlined. Like, I guess like you're walking down some hallways, but then when you get to like the big cities, that looks like you can run around and go crazy. And especially now that movement isn't locked down to a grid, it might be a little bit more linear in some areas to guide the player, but then you'll have like big expansive areas to explore. That's what it looks like just from judging by like the videos. So I'd be fine with that if the areas are interesting enough to explore.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I was a little bummed that it's a little more probably ocean focused, like Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, because those were, even the original Ruby and Sapphire were, you know, probably the biggest ones to focus on the water areas of the world. So I'm sure there's going to be lots of surfing and, you know, a bunch of stuff that you're going to do in between each of the islands.
Some Sharkpedo wave riding.
Yeah, Sharkpedo wave riding. But what was interesting, because some people were talking about, you know, in past Pokemon games, you've got mountains, you've got, you know, snowy areas and things like that. And they were bummed because they're like, well, we can't really have that in these islands. But, you know, there is actually snow at times on the volcanoes of Hawaii at certain times of the year. So potentially they could still have, you know, some pretty good diversity between all of the environments. So hopefully they'll do stuff like that, maybe even have some seasons or, you know, throw in some areas where there'll be some snow, some lava flows, or, you know, different things like that.
I think the presence of the Alolan forms of Sandshrew, Sandslash, Vulpix, and Ninetales were, I feel like they were a good hint that we're going to see like a snow area or like a wintry area.
Yeah, that was very, it's very interesting that they showed off those forms that they were seeming to be colder, even though the world we've seen so far isn't.
I don't know. I'd have to agree with that. Yeah, we just kind of saw the forms, but we didn't really see the environment too much that maybe the forms come from.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think this is something a little bit about the Pokedex, or not the Pokedex, or it's the log entries in Pokemon.com. I think they say something about them, right?
I think so. I think there is a little bit of detail on them.
Yeah. They've been very, very specific with what information they feed us. And it's a little bit by a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
Let's see. Here we go. I just went up and looked up the Vulpix entry. And it says that Vulpix came to the Alola region together with humans, but the Fox Pokemon moved up to the Snowy Mountains to avoid the normal habitats of other Pokemon. So, Snowy Mountains, there you go.
Bam, confirmed.
Yeah, these Alolan Vulpix live on high mountains that can remain covered in snow year-round.
Hey, there you go. Cool. So there's got to be some snow areas.
Mountains confirmed.
Yeah. You know, and I do kind of wonder if there's a lot more to the world than what they've shown off. You know, obviously we've seen, you know, some brief concept art of the maps. But I'm sure there's a lot more that we haven't seen.
Yeah, because it's mostly been like, what, ports, ocean, some jungle.
Yeah, real open places. It really hasn't gotten into the nitty-gritty. And with each separate island, I imagine that you could create a very different environment from each one.
Yeah.
That's true. I'm just kind of staring at the map right now, trying to glean what information I can. You can kind of see the snow route, Snowy Mountain on one of the islands.
Snowy Peaks, on that one island. Looks like it's kind of the biggest one. And then you've got kind of like a volcano... that looks less active on one island, and then there's another one that looks like it has lava flows and stuff on it too. But I noticed some people were talking about the map, and you know, there's kind of these big clouds on different parts of the map, and so some people were thinking there's, you know, maybe some hidden islands. In fact, at the top right of the artwork, looks like there's a tiny island up there.
Yeah, top right, bottom left, there's another island.
Yeah, so potentially there's definitely at least more than the four big ones, you know, just going off those small little ones there. And that was even true in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. You've got some tiny ones that are kind of off the beaten path, but so hopefully there's some fun little secrets. And, you know, I do kind of wonder, guys, if we're going to see more underwater areas, because that was a heavy focus with Ruby and Sapphire, and again with the remakes.
That would be really cool. There's some awesome underwater volcanic caves.
Yeah, like I think there's a lot of potential. I mean, you have a ton of water, obviously, surrounding these islands. So, I don't know. It seems like they would it would kind of stink if they didn't do something with that.
Seems like I need to pick up Oras.
Yes, you do, Matt. Absolutely.
I'm just like, underwater stuff, what? Excuse me?
it is pretty cool. I really did like how they implemented it in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. Oris, yeah. I thought it was great.
I don't know, man. Too much water.
Yeah.
3 out of 10, too much water.
That's right.
But there is, I mean, we don't know everything we could do on the islands, but we do know the main objectives of these islands, which are, you know, you perform, like, the island trials. You perform a task, you find a totem Pokemon, which are, like, these larger-than-average Pokemon with, like, little auras that could call out other Pokemon for help. After that, you fight the Kahuna of each island, which is, I guess, it would be, like, the equivalent of, like, a gym leader in previous games, if I can, like, interpret this correctly.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the auras will not only power them up, but then they'll also be able to call allies to it. It almost feels like they're trying to make the concept of like horde battles and make them less boring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I am all for that, because horde battles are the most tedious things I've ever run across in this game.
Yeah. Because if I remember, we were looking on the website and... the website kind of hinted that some Pokemon that aren't necessarily totem Pokemon might have that ability as well.
Interesting.
It'd be interesting to see if that's just limited to wild Pokemon, or if that's like an ability that, like, if you catch the Pokemon, like, he can call for help, or like a trainer can call Pokemon for help. I mean, I'm really just, I'm obviously very stretching on this, but you know, it should be kind of fun to think about.
You never know. I mean, it seems like with this game, they're trying to break up the norms and get new people into it and give longtime fans like a new experience. You know, because I've been playing since the beginning, and it's very much a formula up to this point.
Yep. Yeah, it does seem like they're trying to freshen it up. It kind of reminds me of that Futurama episode where Fry's watching Blurring's Ball in the future, and he's like baseball was classic. Why did they have to change it up? And then he thinks for a second. He's like, oh, they jazzed it up. Oh, okay. You know. I think that's kind of the same thing. Like people will, you know, maybe the purists will be like, oh, they changed too much stuff. And then they'll be like, oh, that's kind of cool what they did.
I really is the voice of the people.
Yes.
I would totally, I think everyone should play Pokemon. I would love it if that was how you won a trainer battle. Is exactly how the sequence goes to the when you get Blurs and Blurs Ball.
Yeah.
Just fireworks start going off and the guy comes in a giant ball. Insect.
Yeah, yeah. What's the Arachnia or one of the spider Pokemon from Gen 2?
Spinarak.
Yeah, Spinarak. It'd be funny to come in on a Spinarak. That'd be great.
Awesome.
Make it happen.
Yeah, somebody can please make that happen. I would love that.
Yeah. You know what? I would actually, you know, speaking of baseball or, you know, like a sport, it'd be kind of fun if they had some sort of a mini game like that, like built in, you know, kind of like games within games.
Isn't that what Super Training was supposed to be in X?
What?
Isn't that what like kind of Super Training was a little bit in X? I mean, obviously it had a purpose, but it was a game within a game.
Yeah. I would like to see something like a little more
expanded.
Yeah, a little more expanded, a little more engrossing.
Calling it a mini game is kind of generous.
yeah, like something where I don't know, like even some sort of rhythm game or something, like based off of like a Rhythm Heaven mini game, or if you guys ever played that baseball game on the 3DS, what's it called, Rusty's Baseball
Challenge? Rusty's Real Deal Baseball.
Yeah, Rusty's Real Deal Baseball. That was actually really fun. Some of the mini games they had in there. Be kind of cool if there were, I don't know, little things like that throughout the world. But
yeah, they could always bring back contests and kind of use that method with those.
Yeah,
like I don't know, you guys are veterans of the industry. I missed out on the whole contest section of Pokemon games. Like, how did that go?
It was kind of weird. You had to make a bunch of secondary items to feed your Pokemon to boost their stats so that you could actually compete and get like a strong head start initially. But the main focus of contests was you would take turns using moves to appeal to judges. And depending on what moves you use, it would give you more appeal. It might like startle Pokemon so they get less appeal. It would change turn order. So there was a lot of strategy to it. I think what I liked best about it was you could take Pokemon that you really enjoyed and maybe weren't so good for battle, and then you could still use them for something else. So you could kind of make like a secondary team of your favorites and use them for contests. So I'd like to see it return.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that aspect, Alex. I think that's a fun idea, you know, having other teams that of Pokemon that aren't necessarily their main purposes fighting, you know what I mean? Like, it looks like they're doing a lot more with, you know, rideable Pokemon in Sun and Moon. It would be interesting if they had, I don't know, like derbies or, you know, like races or something where certain Pokemon, like you saw the horse Pokemon in Sun and Moon.
Mudsdale,
yeah, that Clydesdale mud one there. Potentially you could have, you know, rideable Pokemon that are like, you could do like race derbies, or you could have different, I don't know, teams of Pokemon that do different things better than others. You know, they're not the best fighters, but you can use them for, you know, these other, activities around the islands.
I gotta say, when I played X, like when I first played X, and like, you know how there's like that Rhydon that's in front of your yard?
Yeah.
I was like, I saw that, and I go, oh, and like, cause they said like something about like, or is it Rhydon or Rhydhorn? I'm sorry, we'll have to cut.
That was Rhydhorn.
Rhydhorn. Yeah. Look, it's been a long day for me. I'm very tired.
That's alright.
I'm doing this for you, the fans. So there's a Rhydhorn outside of your yard, and I think your mom mentions that she's a virtual Rhydhorn, or she's like a Rhydhorn racer, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I was totally prepared to somewhere within the game to be like a Rhydhorn racer, like to take place in a race, and nothing was not there, and I could not have been more disappointed about that.
Yeah, I actually thought the same thing, Matt. I was like, oh, that would be kind of a cool mechanic. Like, I know racing games in general, like, I mean, they could make it so simple it's not fun at all, you know? But, I mean, if they did just some, I don't know, just a, what was that horse racing game recently that Game Freak did?
Pocket Jockey.
Yeah, Pocket Jockey.
Like that's a, I mean, it's kind of a fun game. Like I liked the card playing aspect of it. Like it was kind of interesting. I don't know, like some sort of racing in a Pokemon game would be kind of cool. You know, Rhydhorn racing or whatever it is. I don't know. It could be like a fun little activity in the game.
Yeah, just something to go with like the lore. If you're gonna build up all this stuff, you know, you should be able to go out and do it.
Yeah, it's like if this was a real world, you know, with people using these Pokemon for, you know, plowing their fields or, you know, different stuff like that, why wouldn't they, you know, use them for, you know, horse racing or, you know, other different contests like that?
Yeah, I mean, get on it, Game Freak. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah. This is gold here.
This is, I mean,
game quarter. I want to bet on Rhydhorn races.
There you go.
Yeah, for all the talk of using Pokemon for other purposes other than fighting, they really don't put up a lot, do they? I mean, there's the use the Mamoswine once, use the Rhydhorn once, and then you can get a Skiddo every once in a while.
Yeah, I would like to see more rideable Pokemon. It looks like they're doing that with the Pokemon ride, but I'm concerned that the Poker ride is just going to be set Pokemon again, you know? And not necessarily your own Pokemon. It would be cool if it's, hey, my own Pokemon, I taught it fly, you know, I'm flying around on a Togekiss or, you know, or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, instead of having to take the Charizard all the time, like, oh, can I get something different?
Yeah, like, you know, just to mix it up, make it a little more dynamic. But
I would actually be fine if it's not on your team, because you can call it any time. So it's already there.
And it allows you to not have to occupy a space for an HM or something that you have to teach your team. So
right, and yeah, this could potentially replace HMs, which you know, that makes me very happy.
Yeah, I am all for that. Like HM, Surf, Waterfall, Dive. I mean, there's so many HMs now that you know, just give us like an item or something like. Like, instead of teaching Flash to a Pokemon, just give us a flashlight or, you know, something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just, or even just giving, like, the Pokemon the innate ability. It's like, okay, this is a water Pokemon, so it should automatically know how to swim.
Yep.
Just jump on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, we don't need that. For the original games, it was cool to kind of, you know, like a Metroid game, you know, kind of hide certain parts of the world behind, you know, moves that the player had to obtain. But nowadays, you know, just give it the ability.
Yeah, find another wall. I mean, there were no shortage of, like, human walls in, like, X and Y. Like, oh, I'm just going to stand here and block this wall because I've lost my contact lens.
Yeah,
go exactly. Go fight at the gym.
Yep.
So yeah, we can, we're kind of like a little bit over a little place. So we talked about Pokerai, we talked about, Four Islands a little bit. I did want to talk about the fighting a little bit because you guys were talking about jazzing it up.
Yeah.
And, it looks like there are a couple of ways that Sun and Moon are going to jazz things up. We have like the Z moves, which are like the super attacks. And they're kind of like a very, like a mega ring kind of thing, it looks like. Or the mechanics are similar, which is like you need the bracelet, you need the crystal, and you need a Pokemon that can work with the crystal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they said that there's one crystal for each type, right? Each Pokemon type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it also said that any Pokemon will be able to pull off the move. So long as you have the corresponding crystal, I could say if you have Pikachu and you have an electric crystal and you charge it up, then you can use the ultimate electric attack.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I'm interested to see how it'll work in gameplay.
I think I'm most interested to see how many goofy dance poses they can pull off for each type, because each type has a different dance.
Yeah.
Which I approve of.
Yes.
I'm wondering where the super move is going to be, like, in terms of, like, where in the menu. Because, like, with Mega Evolutions, that was, like, an option. Aside from, like, the four attacks, there's, like, the four attacks, and below that was Mega Evolve, and then you hit an attack. Mm-hmm. Now, are these, like, Z moves going to be, like, because you can only use them once per battle, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, is that, like, a fifth option that you're going to have? Because it doesn't seem like, you know, players are going to enjoy, like, having one of their, like, essential, like, move slots taken up by this one-time-only attack.
Yeah, I bet you it'll be a fifth, you know, option, or I guess a sixth. I mean, granted, the Mega Evolution, you tap it kind of toggles it, and then you do one of the existing moves. But I could see, like, the Z move being context-specific, and whenever it's active, it pops up maybe in the center, and you have the four moves, you know, kind of around it or something. So it's like, hey, press right here in the center to do a Z move, or, you know, whenever it's charged up. But it could be down in the bottom corner, you know, wherever they decide to align it.
Yeah, as long as it's not taking up, like, that one of the four slots, I think I'll be fine with it.
Yeah.
That'll most likely be the case.
Mm-hmm. And when I saw the footage of the Z moves, I looked at that and I thought, how is this, like, how are these islands just not a series of craters? Because there's, like, massive whirlpools going off, like, the fire is just a giant explosion.
The people of Alola are very resilient, apparently.
That's right.
So are the islands, apparently.
Well, they got those volcanoes, so it's constantly creating new land.
Shoot, yeah. Maybe those volcanoes are one of the
life, man.
Yeah, this is just like the 50th set of islands.
Yeah.
Geography changes like every week.
Yeah, they've already blown up the other 50.
That'll be the great secret twist in this game.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that would explain the artificial island. They're looking to develop their own islands to kind of combat the mass of Pokemon trainers that are coming to Alola and destroying their islands.
Yeah, with their super training, not super training, sorry, with their Z moves and all that, yeah.
Exactly. And
another thing, I completely forgot about this, it just kind of occurred to me during this very podcast, another thing that they're looking to jazz up the battle formula is the 1v1v1v1 battles, like the free-for-all, basically.
Oh, yeah, the Battle Royale.
That's it.
They're calling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
And I kind of like what they're doing with it. They're not... Oh, sorry?
I was going to say, I'm not too sure I'm sold on that one.
Yeah.
Because that seems like it'd be way too easy to gang up on one person.
Right. But the idea is that, you know, once the one person goes down, then it's like, who did the most damage? Who got the KOs, you know, like, points are awarded that way. So it might not be like the let's all gang up on one person as well as you think.
Here's hoping. But again, it's like, until, like, we see more footage of it and more details are explained, we can only speculate.
Yeah. Like, are there going to be, like, Because the more I think about it, like, there are, like, moves, like, say you're in a horde battle, there are, like, area effect moves, like Surfer, Earthquake. You know, are those going to, like, work the same way on, like, a free-for-all? Where, like, Earthquake damages all three opponents?
It'd be interesting if, like Pokemon contests, if the moves had different functions when you're in the battle royale than they did in a standard one versus one battle.
That's a good point.
But they just won't give us any information.
Yeah, what a shocker there. I mean, those are two of the, I think, the biggest changes coming to the Pokemon battle formula. I don't see anything about, like, this is weird. Like, we're in a post-Mega Evolution era in Pokemon. And, yeah. I mean, I don't even know if Mega Evolution is going to make a return in this game.
I'm sure it will, but yeah, it's interesting. They've decided not to announce any Mega Evolutions yet for Sun and Moon.
Yeah, just, I think the only alternate forms, besides the bird Oricorico, like, are the two legendaries for this. And they have, like, they have, like, these kind of alternate forms, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have, like, the Lunar Eclipse form or something.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that.
It just seems like in this game, they're maybe moving away from the Mega Evolution thing and trying to focus more on, like, these different forms that you can achieve in battle, depending on, like, if the circumstances are right or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, Mega Evolution might also, like, interfere with, like, the idea of having, like, a Z-move, too, because those are items you need to carry, and so are the Mega Stones. Mm-hmm. So, who knows what's going to happen there?
We'll have to wait till November.
No, they better give us information about that sooner.
Yeah, they'll give us something.
Yeah. I guess we should talk about, like, I guess the bad guys of this game, which are Team Skull.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, what, are they just a bunch of street punks, right?
I guess it's what Japan thinks a gangster's like.
Yeah.
Not too sure.
I thoroughly enjoyed the way they talk to each other, though.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm sold on, like, the very crazy hand movements whenever they talk, though.
Did you guys ever play Phoenix Wright, the latest one?
No.
Dual Destinies. Nope. They had a DLC where you had to defend a whale, and spoiler alert. The guy who's, like, responsible for, like, one of the murders, or not one of the murders, the murderer. That's the one I'm looking for. The murderer, the guy who murders the murderer. but yeah, the murderer, he has that exact same, like, mannerisms as, like, these Team Skull guys, which is a lot of his dialogue is, like, rap lyrics, and he'll do, like, he'll move his arms around, like, of course, nobody can see what I'm doing, but and it's great. I loved watching that then, and so I get a kick out of watching these Team Skull guys talk to each other like that.
I don't know, they got a lot of energy, because, like, they're going at it, like, a mile a minute with those hand movements. So too much to take in for me.
Yeah. But we know, like, anyway, we kind of know, like, the leader's name is, like, Guzma.
It's your boy Guzma.
Is that what he said?
Apparently. Yeah, oh. That's what he says.
And so we know the leader of this one is Guzma, and it says he has, like, a history of, like, this region's professor, which is Professor Kukul.
Yeah, Kukui. Kukui. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently they both tried to undergo the island trials and become island captains, but they both failed at it.
Ah, interesting.
So I guess that's going to be Guzma's backstory, is he's got a beef to pick with everybody who takes the trials.
Ah, interesting, yeah.
And they're out, like, messing up the trials, I guess.
I do like his design, especially his glasses. If you look at the glasses, it looks like both a sun and a moon.
For each, oh, really?
Each frame. Yeah, and then if you also look at the team Skull Goons, the skulls that they have in their shirts also look like his glasses, the little eye sockets.
Huh.
So, yeah, it's a nice attention to detail there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm taking a look. Yeah, I guess I can see it, sun and moon, and yeah. Good observation, Alex.
Oh, thanks. You know, I try. And then they have the admin that they showed off, Plumeria. I guess acts like the big sister to the grunts. So I guess once you beat up on a bunch of grunts, she'll get mad at you and then pick a fight with you. So that'll be interesting, because usually they always depict the grunts as like obviously the lowest of the low, but you know, the team members never really care for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the grunts are kind of like not really given any kind of personality, like, oh, I'm here to defeat you. They did a little bit with like the team player stuff, like you'd recognize some people here and there because like their dialogue would continue, or they would pick up from like the last time you fought them. Like, oh, you may have beat me three times. I mean, this is obviously a poor example, but one guy was like, oh, you beat me three times, but how about this fourth time?
Fourth time's the charm, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it's like a not really a good example of showing somebody recurring, but, I mean, it at least set forth the example of like, oh, this is the same guy you fought before, except he's a little bit stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's an interesting, I don't think it's coincidence that they added the fact that Plumeria is the one that looks after them all. You never know, maybe later on in the story, Guzma might go crazy, and Plumeria might become like a turncoat and kind of end up helping you out. Because it sounds like they're not all bad, they got some heart to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw that Team Skull video when they zoomed in on Guzma. When he challenged you to a fight, I think he's already crazy. Like, he had that looking up, maniacally laughing. One eye was going one way, the other eye was going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's already
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, he just looks like he's just genuinely, like, manic or a maniac.
Mm-hmm. Like, if I could paint my own scenario, there'll be a situation that he gets into where he kind of puts the grunts in danger, and that'll make Plumeria mad, and so she and the rest of Team Skull will kind of help, will join you to kind of help stop him.
Yeah, he'll go.
This is all speculation. If I could write the story, that's probably how I would do it based on the info we've gotten.
Mm-hmm. He'll go take things a little too far.
You know, I could absolutely see that. I'm already writing the rest of the scenario in my head.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do something crazy. And it has something to do with that weird girl who's like the assistant to the professor. What's her name?
That is a good question.
Lily? Which we haven't really talked about the companions at all. And it's not in our notes at all.
Bummer.
But yeah, I guess you get like two, I wouldn't say companions, but like people your age or your character's age that'll play significant portions or parts in this game. And I guess
they'll probably play the role of rival.
Who, what, how?
I said they'll probably play the role of rival, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it says that Lily doesn't like to fight with Pokemon, so I don't think that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean she won't, though.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean she won't, but I think Hal probably will, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Lily probably, I mean, this is probably just going to be something like Lily knows something about some such Pokemon. Like, she has a connection to, like, the two legendaries somehow. And then that somehow gets her wrapped up in Team Skull. And, like, that's how you discover the secret or, you know, something like that. I think that story beat's going to be there.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Especially because they put mysterious. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, you know something's going to happen when they draw attention like that.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else we should cover about this? We can cover... I mean, we haven't covered, like, the new abilities.
The Pokemon.
We haven't covered really the most important part of the game, the Pokemon. But yeah, just to kind of run through this... Just to run through this real quick, otherwise this is going to be like a whole podcast in itself.
Yep.
There's 37 new Pokemon that have been announced so far that are just like brand new. And then that's not including the 8 Alolan versions of like the original 150. We think there's more to come. Obviously, we still have a few more months out before Sun and Moon show up. So just to have like these 8, like they're like these, they're seemingly random Pokemon.
Yeah, they usually give you just kind of like a broad spectrum when introducing new ones. And then they'll leave a few that are a pretty cool surprise. Until somebody leaks the full list and then you ruin the surprise for yourself.
Yeah. But, I mean, right now, like, for the 8 Alolan, like, 50% of them are ice. So there's got to be some more coming in.
Well, definitely. Well, we know there's going to be a fire-type area because they have... The Fire Island Captain.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So,
but yeah, we haven't seen a whole lot of fire Pokemon new ones yet.
Yeah, that's true.
So far from. Ah, sorry.
No, I was just saying that's true. So, that's the end of my statement there.
Well, there you go. I was gonna say from what I've seen so far, I'm pretty happy with the way the new Pokemon look. I think they're going to be a lot of fun to use.
Any of them, like, particularly stand out to you?
I like Wimpod, mostly because it's probably the closest I'm going to get to a Stingray-type Pokemon, and it looks more of like a horseshoe crab. And I really, really like the bug water type. What was Surskit in Ruby and Sapphire was bug and water, and I got all excited to use it, but then when it evolves, it gets bug flying, which is a terrible type matchup.
It
totally killed my dreams.
Mm-hmm. So you could have just kept it in a Sunskit forever.
Just for the typing.
Yeah, enjoy it while until he gets below 50% health and he bails on you.
Like, nah, you just throw a quick ball, you'll catch him.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about your Pokemon when he's on your team, and then he bails on you.
Nah. Like, he'll be braver when he's under my control.
Did anyone? No, that's not what they said. Like, Wimp Out already seems like the worst ability.
No, I'll do special training like they did in the Pokemon anime. They had the Sandshrew that could swim in the water. I'll just train my Wimpod to be brave. Problem solved.
Yeah, okay. Enjoy that, and I can't wait to watch your Wimpod chicken out and run away.
It will crush you.
Nice. And that's gonna. I think that's also gonna make things fun for people trying to catch Pokemon too. It's like, all right, that was a good hit. Oh, where is it going?
Out of there.
I think the Oricoricos were just a very interesting idea. That it's just one of them, but there's like 4 versions of them.
Yeah, I like that idea. It seems like they're experimenting a lot more with forms and variations, and it's going to be hard to keep track of. It's going to be interesting how they're going to do the Pokedex this time. If it's going to be, you know, all numbered, or are they just going to have, like, is Oricorio going to be one number and then it just has its 4 differences, or because I know they've had differences in form before, like the male and female, sometimes they're different numbers, like Nidoran, Nidorina, Nidorino. But in other cases, they just look slightly different, like a Pikachu, male Pikachu versus a female Pikachu has the notch in the end of the tail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, versus like heart. I like the difference between the male and the female Wobbuffet, which is the female Wobbuffet just has lipstick on.
Yeah,
that's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe they'll still just, you know, hide them in the numbers and they'll just be, you know, slight variations, you know, kind of like shinies and different things like that.
Well, I think in past games, what they've done is you can go into their Pokedex entry and there'll be a separate page there where you can look at each individual form as you encounter it.
Okay.
So they might do something like that.
Hmm. I'd be down for that.
Yeah, I think so.
And of course, you know, I think like the new Pokemon, there's always a set of them that always like try to creep you out as much as possible. And I think Sun and Moon are no exception with Bruxish, and I think Pyukumuku.
Yeah,
I think that one creeps us out the most.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a fun idea though, and I'm sure it's based on some sort of real world animal that does exhibit some sort of similar behavior. It's kind of like a sea cucumber or, you know, something, some sort of invertebrate. But
that
kind of an interesting idea.
Shoot, that punches you with its innards.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that does exactly that, but I'm sure there's something out there that's.
Strange. I mean, there probably is. Mm-hmm. I mean, nature's pretty gross.
Yeah, and a lot of like the deep sea creatures that they're finding, all these new species. I'm sure there's lots of crazy ones that seem otherworldly.
Yeah. So I'm surprised that we haven't seen some of those, like, show up in Pokemon.
Yeah.
I know one Pokemon that really creeped me out in X and Y. I forgot to look up the name, but it's that it's like that one, that pink fairy Pokemon that kind of looks like it just like escaped from Yellow Submarine only to be hit by a bus.
Is that a fairy Pokemon?
Yeah. Alex, where are you on this?
What's it, Aromatis?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one is rather frightening.
Yeah, I just found it, yeah. It just, that creeps me out.
So but going back to, like, diving and stuff, that would be really awesome if there were only certain Pokemon where you had to dive to a certain depth to be able to encounter them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, they dwell only in places of high pressure or something. Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. I'm all for that.
I would totally be down for that. Now, could you take them out of high pressure situations?
Oh, yeah. Pressure areas? You wouldn't have a very good game now, would you?
Yeah, that's
right. So, maybe you can get them like a little pressurized scuba mask.
There you go.
So what other new Pokemon are you guys' favorites? I've already taken Wimpod. Wimpod is my favorite. What about you guys?
I don't know, really. I mean, I've been looking through them, and like nothing really kind of stands out too much. It's like, oh, this is the greatest one ever.
I don't know. They've got that praying mantis with the bacon pants. That's a close second for me.
Bacon pants?
Yeah, the Lurantis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the Lurantis. What was another one? I'm looking up them right now.
Wishiwashi is pretty cool too.
Yeah, Wishiwashi, the school form is really cool looking. I kind of like the koala bear with the, holding the tree stump thing.
Yeah.
I have a feeling he's going to evolve into something powerful. I'm hoping he's like a three evolution, you know, big massive bear looking thing.
He gets like a whole tree.
Yeah.
Like Kamala is his name. I'm going through the list right now.
Yeah, I do really like that it was a bug, electric bug, I think.
Are you talking about that stupid cutie fly?
No, oh, man, Vikavolt.
Yeah, what was it?
Oh, no, that was Bug and Fairy. Vikavolt.
Vikavolt, yeah. Oh, and also the Salamandit, the salamander-looking one. I like anything that's like crocodile or reptile-looking. Like one of my favorites...
You used Sandile, didn't you, in Gen 5?
Yes, in Gen 5, yeah, Sandile. And his final evolution's awesome looking. I think he was a dark ground type.
That was a fun one to use.
Yeah, he was really cool. I always loved Feraligatr in Gen 2. He was the final evolution of the water starter. But yeah, anything that's generally, you know, crocodilian looking or... salamander, lizard-like, is kind of fun. Dinosaur, any of the dinosaur-looking Pokemon are awesome.
Let's see. I think I'll get myself a Gumshoes. Solve some crimes. I'll solve some crimes.
That's right. You know what? One thing I'm excited about is when they've shown off like Litten and like some of the other starters. And they show them when they're actually executing some of their moves. Like, I like how Litten has, like, these three little red spikes that come up on its back when it's, like, shooting a fireball. So I hope there's a lot of that sort of stuff. And I think there was that, it was kind of like a Pikachu-looking thing, but it's all of the, it's like a spherical ball, but it's little...
Togedemaru?
Yeah, it has these little triangular... scaly looking things that flap up when it does one of its moves. I just like those little details, and I hope there's a lot of those where, you know, maybe a Pokemon that doesn't look like it has wings, but when it actually does something, like something flares out, has like these little wings that flare out or whatever. Just be cool to see all that variety.
Seems like they're trying to give them more personality. Another one that I noticed was the Alolan Meowth is a dark type, and if you let it sit idle in battle, it kind of like brushes back its whiskers like, I'm too good for you.
Yeah,
I think sassy Meowth.
Yeah, sassy Meowth. They're definitely giving them more personality, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Wasn't he like the mascot of the one of the mascots of the cartoon?
Meowth. He was with Team Rocket. Yeah, in the original. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean. That's all the personality you need right there.
Yeah.
True that.
Hey, but, you know, Pokemon can have plenty of personality and not say much at all. Like the Squirtle Squad with all their cool sunglasses. You know, Squirtle, Squirt, Squirt, you know.
Awesome.
That's all you need to say.
All right. That is all you need to say. As we start wrapping this KubaCast up. So I want to thank you, Alex, and you, Justin, for joining me on this episode.
Anytime.
No problem.
And as always, I'd like to thank our readers for reading our magazine and website, our listeners for listening to the KubaCast, and any other awesome stuff that we put out there. And if you want to hear more of the KubaCast, you can always go to purenintendo.com/podcast to find out more episodes. We have our entire backlog there. For anybody who listens on iTunes, we always update on our iTunes every week, so please sure check out that. Search KubaCast. Boom, there it is. If you have any questions for the KubaCast, you can always email us at podcast@purenintendo.com. We also have a Twitter account. I am @purely_Matt. Justin is @purelyjustin. And Alex is... I had him on memorized and they're gone.
It's at Alex Schramke.
It's at Alex Schramke.
S-C-H-R-A-M-K-E.
You know, all I keep thinking about is when I'm trying to say your Twitter handle, Alex, is Trev's voice in my head corrected me on his Twitter account. He's like, Matt, it's Trev_G1. Why can't you get it right?
That's just an uncommon last name. I should probably change it so it's easier to find me.
Yeah, you could be @purelyAlex.
I'll have to get on that.
So there you go. Maybe it could be. Maybe you followed Alex at Purely Alex.
It's anyone's guess this time. You know, it's kind of like a game.
That's right. Exactly. And all of us together are at Pure Nintendo, so you can find that one pretty easily. No mystery there. And finally, for more news, reviews, and features, please check out PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. And we'll see you next time. We'll be right back.